According to the pundits, Hillary Clinton dominated the Democrats' first televised debate last night. Just ahead, we want your say. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And this morning, we want your reaction to last night's Democratic presidential debate. Let us know who you think won, your thoughts about the issues and more. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, the immigration issue and campaign 2016, as we speak with the president of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Plus, Going Green spotlights this weekend's Green Lion Festival, and we'll tell you about the new original production on the First Coast, St. George and the Dragon, all of that ahead. But first this hour, frontrunner Hillary Clinton turned in a commanding performance during last night's Democratic presidential debate in Las Vegas. The pundits say the former Secretary of State outshone the other four candidates on stage, although fans of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders feel he had his moments as well. Jim Webb, Martin O'Malley, and Lincoln Chafee, the other candidates in the race, failed to have any significant breakthrough moments. Although we'll discuss all of it at length this morning as we begin the hour with a look at the debate and take your calls and comments. Right now, we welcome in studio Ben Weaver, a local Democratic activist who's affiliated with the Sanders campaign. Ben, good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Melissa. Good to be here.
And here's our question to callers. Did you watch the Democratic debate last night? What are your thoughts? Who do you think won? What are your thoughts about the election? Get on the line now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. We're already getting your comments on Facebook. And actually, Ben, a couple of them are saying that the corporate media has already decided that Hillary Clinton won the debate. Not everyone is agreeing with that, at least according to our Facebook page. You are affiliated with the Bernie Sanders campaign, so let's state that right up front. You have a bias towards Sanders.
I do. I'm a supporter.
What are your thoughts about the debate last night?
I thought that there was a strong showing by all the candidates. Each of them brought to the table their vision for America and articulated it in a way that spoke to their bases, but also seemed to speak to the party as a whole. It was a strong showing and was very proud of the Democratic candidates.
Let's explain why you have organized for Bernie Sanders. The local hashtag in this area is Jacks for Bernie. Why did you decide to jump on board with that campaign? You're well known around town for organizing for Democratic candidates and causes. Why campaign for Sanders?
About 10 years ago, I was working with local Democrats to write some talking points. And one of the points I wrote was, no one who works 40 hours a week should be poor. 10 years later, I'm scrolling through my Facebook feed, and there it is. It's quoted from Senator Bernie Sanders. And it just blew me away. I'm a huge fan of Senator Sanders, as I am of Secretary Clinton. But this spoke to me, and it seemed to speak to a larger audience after seeing the activity online and the movement towards the senator and these ideas, these more progressive ideas than we've heard in the past recent from the Democratic Party candidates. It was just inevitable. I'm a progressive. He's a progressive. He represents what I stand for.
We'll go to your calls about last night's Democratic debate, the first one in the 2016 campaign, in just a moment at 549-2937. A lot of these issues came up: campaign finance reform, the Supreme Court's ruling on Citizens United, Wall Street reform, income inequality, college affordability, other issues that Sanders has campaigned on. One issue where he differed sharply with Hillary Clinton had to do with gun control. Let's take a listen to Hillary Clinton on guns and then Bernie Sanders.
We have to look at the fact that we lose 90 people a day from gun violence. This has gone on too long, and it's time the entire country stood up against the NRA.
I come from a rural state, and the views on gun control in rural states are different than in urban states, whether we like it or not.
What about that issue? Ben Weaver.
Well, I think that the senator makes a good point, and that is that in America, we have a broad perspective on weapons and guns, especially. It's constitutionally protected. And because of that, there are a lot of different views on how we should approach that. And I think what stood out more than anything was sort of this view that there is a urban look at guns and policies as it relates to guns, and then there is a rural look at that. And I think what Senator Sanders' point was is that we've got to have a broad viewpoint of what we're looking at, because not one size fits all on this answer. And based on his experience, he just, you know, in Vermont, he hasn't had the experience of dealing with a large urbanized area and making and bringing those two things together. So that was a weak spot for him, and Secretary Clinton certainly went after it.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment on last night's Democratic debate at 549-2937. The five candidates on stage talked about a number of issues that are a completely different set of issues than what the Republican candidates in their two debates have talked about. One issue that did come up last night, though, that has come up for the Republicans was Secretary Clinton's emails and the Benghazi issue in Libya. Bernie Sanders taking the stage and saying, in his words, people are tired of hearing about your damn emails. What was your reaction to that?
I was excited to hear the statement. Senator Sanders has done something very, very interesting in all of this. He's stayed on the positive. He's talked about his vision. He's talked about his values. And because of that, he's been able to continue to build support without being divisive. And on this issue, he, again, where's the division? Look, this is a talking point. I mean, look, McCarthy came out and said that Benghazi was a GOP plot to bring down Hillary Clinton's numbers. That's now in the public sphere. We know that. So to say that it's anything else just adds credibility to a political ploy. And I think Senator Sanders pointed that out well. He and the secretary are friends. So I think that it was good to see that unity on that issue.
Let me ask you, though, as a follow-up, you say Bernie Sanders isn't divisive. Many Americans might disagree with that. They might think that a Democratic socialist who is calling for free college education for everyone, what they perceive as a massive redistribution of wealth, they see those positions as too extreme. What's your answer to that?
That makes sense. Given the political rhetoric over the last 40 years, it's understandable that people would think that. If you're told that yellow is blue your entire life, then that's what you're going to call yellow when you see it. And for the last 40 years, we've been sold this idea that the economy works a certain way, that if we do these certain things, then it'll work out for everybody, so far as voodoo economics. So that's, of course, people feel like that's the way things should operate. But if you look at history and you look at the past and you go back to the middle class that we built in the 50s and 60s in this country, and you look at the policies that we pursued, we built those based on these policies of, and to borrow a phrase from Martin O'Malley, we're all in this together, that we have to appeal to what's good in America and stand looking out for each other.
Here's another clip of Bernie Sanders talking about the civil war in Syria. Let's listen.
We're talking about a quagmire in a quagmire. You're talking about groups of people trying to overthrow Assad, other groups of people fighting ISIS. You're talking about people who are fighting ISIS using their guns to overthrow Assad and vice versa.
Hillary Clinton has been hammered by Republicans for her tenure as Secretary of State. However, when it comes down to a contest for the Democratic nomination between Clinton and Sanders, how will you see supporting Sanders on foreign policy issues? Most observers see Clinton as stronger on foreign policy than Bernie Sanders. What are your thoughts?
That sounds very familiar to 2008. And the way that Barack Obama dealt with that was, as Secretary Clinton pointed out last night, he appointed her Secretary of State. So as the president, you're going to have a lot of assets. You're going to have a lot of opportunities to bring people in and to put people to work. Secretary Clinton has a very broad knowledge and relationships and a footprint in global politics that can help or could conceivably hamper, depending upon her relationships. So I believe that obviously she spent her life in government, you know, around government and in government service, and her foreign policy experience is second to none. That said, I think that we need a different approach in terms of looking at ways to build these coalitions, to build them stronger, and not to make the mistakes that we made, like going into Iraq.
And let's go to your calls and comments right now about last night's Democratic presidential debate. 549-2937. Let us know what's on your mind. Autumn is in Ortega. Autumn. Hey, Autumn.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning. I actually watched the debate last night, and I just wanted to comment on how stiff everyone seemed, except for Bernie. I thought that he seemed a lot more relaxed and at ease with all the questions. And one of the biggest points that I had that I have been a longtime Bernie supporter, but I love that he answered the questions about Snowden when O'Malley and Clinton just completely clammed up. And I had some friends who are pretty staunchly in Hillary's camp, and they actually are kind of starting to go over to Bernie's camp from stuff like that. So just wanted to make those points.
All right. Well, so Autumn, who will receive your vote?
Oh, definitely Bernie Sanders, unless suddenly something happens. I hope that he gets the nomination. That's my big hope. So if he doesn't,
Autumn.
I guess it'll be Hillary.
Okay. That's Autumn in Ortega. Thanks for the call. Ben Weaver.
Well, feel the burn, Autumn. We're with you.
549, and that's the slogan, 549-2937. Richard is in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Go ahead.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a quick comment specifically about the difference between Bernie's approach and Hillary's approach to gun control. It's been said that all politics is local, but the problem with taking local politics to Washington is what is happening with the Republican Party right now. It's imploding because everybody's got their own agenda based on how things work in their state. We're talking about the leader of the United States, not just a state. So guns in a rural city, or rural state, I should say, has a totally different meaning in an urban state. But as it relates to the United States, the protections will come from the United States, not from that local state. Here in the state of Florida, we got to stand your ground because the states say that's okay. My point is this. If we do not change, and this is, I'm just speaking as an African-American, if we do not make the politicians speak directly to our issues, then a line like urban gun violence and rural gun violence, it's just like urban states and rural states when it came to slavery. We cannot separate this based on states, and Bernie Sanders may well lose it on the gun battle thing, the black vote, I'm saying, if he does not come off of the states have the rights to decide. And we can't make our NRA break this down to state level because that's how they control the game. And I'll listen off there.
All right. Thanks, Richard. Let's talk about that issue. Also, the issue of race did come up last night. All of the candidates were asked, do black lives matter or do all lives matter? Ben Weaver.
Richard makes a good point. And I think it's interesting to see the evolution of a candidate. That's been most obvious with Senator Bernie Sanders. When he first came out, he came out on fire, and he came out like a Southern preacher, and full of energy. Well, immediately he began to get pushback that they didn't really understand. And what he did was he pulled together his team, specifically Marcus Farrell, his African-American outreach director, and he reached out to the Black Lives Matters movement and brought them in. And if you look at that, Richard, and I think if you look at that with guns, I think we're going to see a lot of that same thing start to happen. I think you're right. Historically, Bernie Sanders' positions on guns is not the position of front-runner Democrats.
Can Bernie Sanders garner enough African-American support, particularly in primary states like South Carolina, say, to wrest the Democratic nomination away from Hillary Clinton?
that's going to be the largest lift in this campaign, is reaching out and explaining why $15 an hour, why affordable college, free public college, why these things are important to all underprivileged community, but specifically to a community that deals with a level of discrimination that is different, and it needs a different voice. It needs a different movement, which is why Black Lives Matters was so relevant in this conversation, raising the conversation about racial inequality.
Lots of tweets, emails, Facebook comments. We also will try to get to comments on our partner, MetroJacksonville.com, about today's discussion. John tweets the show, Hillary won, great solid performance. Susan tweets, I'm holding back support, but it was more professional than the GOP debate. It looks like the Dems are embracing civility. On our Facebook page, lots of comments. Janice writes, I watched the debate last night. I'm glad it wasn't a circus that the Republican debate seemed to be. I thought Sanders nailed it. Linda, CNN ran a poll on who won. 80% of the viewers said Sanders won. Then they announced the winner is Hillary Clinton. Corporate media is picking the winner. Lots of further comments on our Facebook page to that effect, at least judging by our social media feedback. A lot of our listeners seem to think Bernie Sanders has their heart, at least right now anyway. Let's go now to Bruce in St. Augustine. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
I believe Sanders won, and the reason why I think he won is that, unlike most of the other politicians, he does not have microwave-ready answers. He truly comes across as a genuine person. He is not so worried about being politically correct. He answers questions the way he sees it. And I would very much like for him to energize people who are not registered. I have three kids. The youngest one is 21, oldest one is 27. None of them are registered because they say it's not going to make a difference, that these special interest groups will eventually pick somebody. And Bernie Sanders nailed it. He needs to energize people who are not registered, and I think they will connect with him. They will understand what he's saying, and he'll get a lot of support from a lot of these people who are not registered. Thank you.
All right, Bruce, thanks for the call. You know, Bruce made the comment that people like Sanders because he tells it like it is. He's not beholden to anyone. Ben, Republican voters say the same thing, almost word for word, about Donald Trump.
A few weeks ago, I wrote a piece called Authenticity Gap, and it talked about what people are looking for in their candidates. And there's some interesting correlations between why people are driven to Donald Trump and why people are driven to Bernie Sanders. I think the most important thing last night, at the end of the debate, they went around and they said, "So, you know, what is it going to take?" And each of them had their answer. And Senator Sanders' answers was, "It's going to take a political revolution." Each of the candidates talked about what they were going to do. Senator Sanders said that this only happens if people show up.
What about the caller's remark that more people, whoever they decide to vote for, need to register to vote?
Absolutely right. When turnout is high, working class people do well. When turnout is high, we see things begin to shake loose for not just working class and middle class people, but for those who are most often neglected in our society.
And the number to join us about last night's debate, the first Democratic debate of the campaign season, is 549-2937. Pat in Fleming Island. Hi, Pat.
Hey, good morning. I watched the debate last night, and I actually thought the American people were the big winner. There was a big difference. First of all, let me say I thought Martin O'Malley really handled himself well as the other two leaders. But the big difference was, in this debate, you couldn't follow a money trail. If you watched the Republican debate, you could see who was being backed by the coal company, who is owned and operated by the oil company. Who is the NRA shill? Who is the big Wall Street money backing? You could see that in each of the candidates. In the Democratic debate, you didn't see any of that. They were willing to stand up to the NRA. They were willing to stand up to Wall Street. They were willing to stand up to big oil and to actually say, maybe we need to get off of coal. The things that matter, the Republicans, in their debates didn't even address climate change, and it's probably one of the biggest issues of our time. I thought after that debate, the American people were really the winner.
All right. Thanks, Pat. And you know what? He mentioned Martin O'Malley. Let's talk about the other candidates for a minute. Martin O'Malley, former governor of Maryland, and Senators Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb, the other major candidates in the race. Vice President Joe Biden, despite some speculation, did not show up. We still don't know if he's going to enter the race. What about his comments?
So, first of all, Pat, with his comment that the American people won, is ready to run for office himself. That was a great line. But he's absolutely right. I mean, you've got five candidates up there that show a level of diversity between themselves. Everyone from Jim Webb all the way down to Senator Bernie Sanders that show a level of diversity and opportunity in terms of selecting a candidate that really fits what you believe, that is much broader than the two dozen candidates for the Republican Party. So, I mean, we're excited about that, and that's one of the things. I was excited to see Martin
O'Malley. Not quite two dozen, but
well,
more than the Democrats.
You lose count often. But Martin O'Malley made a strong showing, I think, last night. I was excited to see him.
You see him as a potential vice presidential pick?
There's those rumors are out there, and he certainly has the gravitas and presence to carry it off.
Randy is in Mandarin. Hi, Randy. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks.
I'm old enough that my first vote was for Hubert Humphrey, and then I remember the debacle of 72, and I think Mr. Sanders, who probably ought to be running as a socialist because he's had several chances to run as senator as a Democrat, has not done that, and I think he'll take us to the same fate that Mr. McGovern did. I listened to all my soft-spoken, well-informed leftist friends tell me how McGovern was going to just take this to a new direction and do all these nice things, and he couldn't carry, what, three states? And I think we're going to look forward to the same event if we follow this path.
Yeah, thank you, Randy. And of course, McGovern losing in a massive landslide to Nixon in 72. Some might not realize George McGovern, who passed away recently, lived here in St. Augustine at the end of his life. A full-spectrum progressive. Mm. Not a socialist, but a full-spectrum liberal on every issue. And he went down in a landslide to Nixon. So what about that argument that, let's say the Democrats put up Bernie Sanders, Ben, that he would be like another McGovern? He would just be far too left to win a general election in this country?
Well, at the moment, the polling doesn't indicate that. What the polling indicates is that Senator Sanders, going into just about every state, stacked up against Republican frontrunners, does very well. And the argument is a fair argument, but I think it really kind of comes down to the question of who do you want to put up there? Do you want to put somebody up there that best represents you, or do you want to put up a compromise candidate? And I think one of the problems, and Senator Sanders brought this up, about people being tired of the institution and tired of being dragged around by institutional politics, establishment politics. We don't need to look at a compromise candidate here. The American people want to see wholesale change. They want to see new ideas. They want to see a vision for America that speaks to what they need. And the vast majority of people in this country need a college education. And they need affordable housing. And they need to be able to feed their families. And the policies of Senator Sanders address those and don't leave them feel wanting like we're seeing from the other side.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Ben Weaver is a local Democratic activist affiliated with the Bernie Sanders campaign here in North Florida. Well, much more still ahead. Later, a look ahead to a new original production debuting in town this weekend, St. George and the Dragon. But up next, how candidates during last night's debate handled the issue of immigration, as we speak with the chair of the local Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Hard work, good luck, nerves of steel, and a dash of mercilessness, apparently, as how one gets unbelievably rich.
You have to be not only absolutely confident that you're going to be that winner, you have to be untroubled by the prospect of wiping everyone else out.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. What the world's billionaires did to get all that money, next time on Marketplace from APN. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, at last night's Democratic presidential debate, one of the many issues that was discussed was immigration. All five candidates on the stage in Las Vegas expressed support for comprehensive immigration reform and some sort of path to citizenship for the estimated 11 million undocumented people living in these United States. Immigration, of course, one of many issues on which the parties differ heading into 2016. Joining us now with her reactions is Rebecca Black, local immigration attorney and chair of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. A pleasure to see you. Good morning.
How are you?
Great to have you. And so last night, all five candidates speaking more or less with one voice, saying they support comprehensive immigration reform. A stark difference from the Republican debates where there's been talk of deportation and building a wall. As the president of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, you've been following this. What are your thoughts about those differences?
Well, to me, it's interesting, first off, because 30 years ago, the Republicans were always the party that traditionally supported immigration reform because they saw it as something that was pro-business.
Right.
Whereas the Democrats typically were against it because they were in favor of the labor movements, which didn't necessarily support a lot of immigration because it might lower wages. And so it's interesting to see the flip-flop. And I think that happened after 9/11, where suddenly national security is more of a concern, but not really, because it's the issue of national security and not the reality of national security for which we're talking about raising walls and keeping people out and deporting people.
So perhaps it's a psychological feeling, a fear of more people coming into this country that you think is driving this?
It could be, and I think most of those fears are groundless, because the vast majority of immigrants are people who really, they just want to work hard, they want a good life for themselves and their families. They're either fleeing total economic decay or war and destruction or brutal gang violence, and they don't come here looking for welfare handouts. They come here looking to work, looking to make a contribution, and something that I think that has lost in this debate is the fact that there are maybe over 3 million Hispanic-owned businesses in the country that generate close to $5 billion in revenue. And immigrants as a whole, there are own businesses that generate close to $8 billion in revenue. So when you look at that and you think, well, these are Hispanics, they live here, they work here, they own businesses here, and their ethnicity has nothing to do with the fact that these are American businesses contributing American money to the economy, paying taxes, employing people. It's estimated 1 in 10 people is employed by a immigrant employer. Mm-hmm. And so you look at the value added to the economy and the growth in the economy that having comprehensive immigration reform will do nothing but benefit our economy, how we live, and the future of our ability to pay our taxes and to pay our deficits.
How do you see immigration reform being a fair solution? Many Americans feel it's unfair to reward those who've come to this country illegally, even if they are now working, opening businesses, and contributing to the economy. What would you say to those who just see that as unfair?
Well, you have to realize that somewhere over 60% of all illegal immigrants in the country are people who came here illegally and then overstayed their visas. So it's the majority of people who are here illegally are people who just crossed the river. And you've got to recognize that some of those people who simply just crossed the river 20 years ago, they were doing it at a time before 9/11 when a lot of people had a wink, wink, nod, nod attitude towards this situation. They were perfectly happy to let it go on until 9/11 happened. And we realized that we did need to have a better control on our borders.
Here in Florida, this is a particularly important issue, especially in South Florida, but not so much with Mexican immigrants, but immigrants that have come from all over the world. But we do have a large Latino population in Florida, and it's growing, and immigrants coming from many countries. You're an immigration attorney. You're also the president of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. You deal with the intersection of these issues every day. Tell me a little bit about your work and some of the cases you've worked on and how you see this affecting this state in particular.
One of the things that I think is troubling to me is that most of our immigration rules were written 20 years ago, and they don't reflect current reality of business or anything else. So, for instance, I might have somebody come in from my office from Venezuela, and unless they have businesses there that they can keep going here while they're trying to do their immigration process here in the country, they have very limited ability to be here. So you have somebody who's educated, who's got means, who's got is smart, ambitious, and he comes here, and you look at him and you say, well, you can file for an asylum claim. Granted, the country's falling apart, but just because there's a lot of criminal behavior in the economy's falling apart, that's not a reason to give somebody an asylum. You can ask for it, but that doesn't mean they're going to get granted. Mm-hmm. So you're it's always that square peg in a round hole. You're trying to look at facts and go, can I make it work here? And a lot of times you really can't. Or somebody from Argentina. We don't have a treaty with Argentina, or we have a treaty with Argentina where the exact kind of same kind of person or business owner can come here, and they can make an investment of $80,000, $100,000, open up a business that employs two or three people, and they're going to be here as long as they keep that business going. And so the guy from Venezuela doesn't have that opportunity, but the guy from Argentina does. Mm-hmm. And there's no logic to it in terms of getting a work visa, because you'll have people come into my office saying, can I get a work visa? Can I get a work visa? And you're like, well, all right, here's the H-1B. There are 85,000 H-1B visas every year. You can apply April 1 to work next October. And last year, there were about 230,000 applications for those 85,000 slots. So I look at that and I go, okay, so you're telling me 65% of all business owners who sit there and identify somebody whose skill sets, talents, and ability they want are willing to pay close to $10,000 in attorney and government filing fees, and you're telling them, nope, you can't get it. We're based on numbers, not on qualifications.
Pretty frustrating.
It is very frustrating.
So in terms of the presidential race, immigration is certainly a wedge issue separating the two fields of candidates. How do you see this affecting the presidential campaign?
It's a mess because a lot of rhetoric is being thrown around that's not based in any kind of real reality. And we all love to listen to the news, watch the news, see the instant replay the next day on the internet, and however we get it, or the endless discussion and newspapers and everything else. And the rhetoric that keeps being thrown around has very little basis in terms of reality. And you wonder, you know, is it just the mere fact of running for national office that you put your brain on hold and let anything come out of your mouth? I don't know. it's divisive. It doesn't help us. I think America is always better when we're inclusive.
Oh, well, perhaps you can keep talking about this issue with our listeners in the months and years ahead. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
We were joined by Rebecca Black, local immigration attorney. She's president of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And we'll be right back.
Relax Radio is the Great American Songbook, oldies and light jazz.
It's the radio station I was always looking for and never found until now.
Harry Moonbeam's home in a jar.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through November 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
They're going to come tomorrow. And when they do, somebody's going to get hurt.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Justin Theroux, who stars in the HBO series The Leftovers, about the people who remain on Earth after 2% of the population mysteriously vanishes in a split second. Theroux co-wrote the comedy Tropic Thunder and wrote the forthcoming film Zoolander 2. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Well, at this time of year, lots of fall festivals are popping up all over town. But there's one happening this weekend that features not just food and drink, but the promotion of green-focused business. It's an eco-friendly event that will shut down part of Hendricks Avenue for all of the fun and some awareness, too. Preben Olson, owner of the Aardwolf Brewery, and Alicia Smith, marketing guru for the Green Lion Festival, join us now. It's today's Going Green. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, this is in partnership with the U.S. Green Building Council of North Florida. Preben, tell us about this. How did this all come about?
This came about 3 years ago. I was working with the USGBC, the Green Building Council, and it kind of just came up as a Aardwolf being a great meeting place for us. In particular, we thought it'd be a great festival location since we have so much room to work with. We kind of have space and spaces at a premium in San Marcos. So just kind of beer led to working with Green Council, kind of just one led to another.
One thing led to another. So it started inside your brewery, spilled out into the parking lot, and then now this year it's spilling out into the street. Is that right?
It is. Yeah, we shut down from Cedar to LaSalle, so an entire block.
All right. Alicia, you're looking at not only putting together a festival, but bringing together local green organizations and green businesses, right?
Yes, that's correct. We have so many great green businesses, local organizations that have, you know, Jacksonville's best green interest at heart, and they're kind of spread out through all the farmers markets and festivals that we had, and we thought this would be a great space to just bring everybody together in one festival on one street.
What are some examples of what people will see when they come out?
Well, we have, we have organizations like the St. John's Riverkeeper protecting our water. We have North Florida Land Trust protecting our land. We have local organic producers here that will have vegetables, goods like reused items made out of reused fabrics and everything. So it'll be a very green-minded event.
And green is a big umbrella term. People think of it in a certain way, but sustainability is a concept that applies to lots of things.
Yes, right? I agree.
Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, so people might it's a way to educate people, I guess, as well, right?
Well, it's a beautiful circle. Sustainable means that you're giving back and you're producing something. So this is a very sustainable festival because everything is local. So keep that money local, keep Jacksonville and, you know, at the core of its interest.
And enjoy the beer.
Oh, of course.
Tell us about Aardwolf. This brewery's been around for a few years now, and it's grown over the years.
Yes, we just had our anniversary the other day, and we've expanded quite a bit. It started off kind of as a hope and a dream a number of years ago, and we've been able to expand and kind of always looked at San Marco. And so we're pretty excited to be able to partner with a bunch of businesses in San Marco in order to bring kind of a festival, because that's where we always wanted to be. And we always wanted to be a community-focused brewery that was taproom first.
Sure. And the local microbrew scene, if you will, gosh, it has just exploded in Jacksonville. Why do you think?
Well, the short answer is people in Jacksonville like to drink.
They like to drink. they enjoy their brew. Now, Green Line Festival coming up this weekend. Part of Hendrix will be shut down, so be advised about that. Is this free? Is this a ticketed event?
No, this is a free event.
Free event.
We also have Porch Fest coming and providing music. We have a bike valet, so we encourage everyone to ride their bikes and food trucks. We have Corner Taco. We have Berry Good Farms, and we have the Girls Gone Green Nacho Bar. So there are a lot of things to keep you occupied at this festival.
And this is Saturday.
Saturday from 11 to 4.
Rain or shine.
Rain or shine. We're hoping shine.
Yeah, I think it'll be shining. I think it's going to be a beautiful weekend. So come on out and enjoy the Green Line Festival along Hendrix Avenue this Saturday in San Marco. Preben Olson, owner of the Aardwolf Brewery, Alicia Smith with the festival. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Melissa.
Well, we'll be right back with a preview of the new original production in town this weekend, St. George and the Dragon.
One College is trying to gather all sorts of teaching and learning data and provide it to professors before a student drops out of class or of school altogether.
We want to help them get there as much as possible because the data is not good if they don't do well on the first try.
Tapping into big data to improve learning, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Life has enough drama.
Seems we've gotten a bad batch of grits, and we think it comes from Minnesota. They've made everyone feel gloomy and guilty.
Oh. And reality.
Can we not do this? Can we just not do this?
I'm going to have a practice funeral.
Find a way to forget your troubles.
With ping pong, trap shooting, hopscotch.
And gather some friends around the radio this weekend.
A Prairie Home Companion returning Saturdays at 6.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, our First Coast Connect book club returns next week with a discussion of writer David McCullough's biography of the Wright brothers. You can check out a copy of the book from the Jacksonville Public Library. We're proud to say they are our partner for the book club. Or buy a copy from Chamberlain's or the Book Nook. They're our partners, too. And then here's our question to you. We want you to email us your memories of your first flight. What do you remember about it? How old were you? Where did you go? Was it exciting, scary? What are your memories? Send us your thoughts to bookclub@wjct.org. We're already getting lots of your emails, and we will read them on the air during our book club discussion. Well, finally this hour, it's a new original production featuring a 20-foot dragon, a film-style original soundtrack, and adventure for the whole family. St. George and the Dragon is a tale of magic, poetry, and cake. Yeah, cake. And it reminds us that gallant knights, fair maidens, and fearsome dragons may not always be what they seem. The show is the creation of playwright and director Jason Woods, and it will see its debut tomorrow at Christ Episcopal Church School of the Arts in Ponte Vedra Beach. We've got a preview now with the playwright, Jason Woods. Good morning and kudos.
Thank you.
So you wrote all the music, you wrote the book. How exciting. A new production for this area.
Yes, that's right.
With a 20-foot dragon. Is it an animatronic moving dragon? What are we talking about here?
He does move because of four puppeteers who work in tandem together in real time. There are no electronics. There's just a lot of magic.
So this is a tale of knights and fair maidens and dragons. This takes us back to times of old. Tell us about the story.
It's set in a village where a witch happens to be visiting just to buy some spices, and she has her pet goblin on a chain. and a visiting knight scares her goblin away, and it rubs her the wrong way, and so she casts a spell, summons a dragon to come and get a little revenge on the village, but her aim isn't quite right.
What inspired you to write this?
I love Kenneth Dragon, Kenneth Graham's book, The Reluctant Dragon. Anything with knights and fairy tales, and a quote by C.S. Lewis, who said in a letter to someone that children will surely face cruel enemies in life, and so at least let them heard of brave knights and heroic courage.
Nice. So the idea is to face our fears, face down our dragons?
That's right. Come face your dragons.
That's the website, by the way, comefaceyourdragons.com to buy tickets. Now, you do the voice of the dragon in
this
production?
That's correct.
You have a little preview for us right now.
Yes, this is a poetic dragon who befriends our protagonist, Olivia. And he's not what people think, and he writes poetry. And on the way here, I was thinking about my love for NPR and WJCT, and I wondered what the dragon might say, so.
WJCT is my favorite station, the place for music, art, and contemplation. It's the home of shows that demand your respect, all things considered, and First Coast Connect. You learn about things like Mozart and Palladio. 89.9 is nothing like public radio.
Oh, that is outstanding. Oh, you, now people have to buy tickets now.
Sure.
That is amazing. Yeah. Now, not only do you voice the dragon, not only did you write the story, you composed all of the music, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a sickness.
No, I think it's a talent. I think you're an amazing talent. What's the music like?
That's hard to say because I absolutely am in total admiration of John Williams, who scored so many things that are so ubiquitous, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Jurassic Park. Those things influenced me. But the story, of course, and the emotion in it has to be organic. It has to come from what the story is trying to tell from an emotional standpoint. The other thing that inspired me, I think, is the performances of these incredible actors. Some scenes that I had not planned music for, their brilliance actually inspired me to compose something. So,
and have you been involved in theater your whole life? Is this your first original production that you've written and mounted from scratch?
I've done a few adaptations, and I was taken to theater when I was very young, and I raised a family for a while, and I lost my job on my birthday 3 years ago, and I just decided to make good on it and pursue my love of theater. And it was the best thing in the world that ever happened to me. And I'm surrounded by the most beautiful, giving, talented people, supportive. I can't believe the encouragement I've gotten from Christ Episcopal Church. Players by the Sea hosted the reading of this play. And just the sheer volume of talent in the show is staggering. Wow. I'm just kind of walking around in a daze.
Wow. Do you hope to take this production beyond the Jacksonville area?
Well, I just got the dragon out of my garage.
But you never know. You never know. Maybe you have a career as a playwright beyond the First Coast.
It's possible. This has been a wonderful place, though, to see this birthed. And I'm so excited now just to let people. We got a preview last night for people, and their response was overwhelming to me. I was just delighted.
So exciting.
Thank you.
Well, again, this debuts tomorrow night, so people need to get their tickets now to a new original production here in Jacksonville. Actually, it's Ponte Vedra Beach by playwright Jason Woods. Remember his name because I think he's going places. He's playwright and director Jason Woods.
Yes, I'm going to lunch.
It's St. George and the Dragon. Get your tickets at comefaceyourdragons.com. This runs through Sunday, October 25th. Can you do me a favor? Mm. Can you read this close in the voice of the dragon?
Oh, but of course.
Thank you. Mm. That would be lovely.
Next on Diane Rehm, Democratic candidates for president meet in Las Vegas for their first debate of the 2016 race. Diane and a panel of political insiders look at how the candidates fared and what it means for the Democratic nomination for president. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM, Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.